Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI, featuring the people, stories, and events of Central Iowa. I'm Ursula Rudenberg, one of your hosts today, joined by
Don Wirth, and we're here to talk to you today about Story County Community Foundation and the Story County Community Grant Program. We'll be talking with Susie Sheerholtz, who is chair of the board of the Story County Community Foundation. Later in the show, we'll be talking to some of the people who have received grants, some of the organizations received grants last year and in the past, and what they've been able to do with that money.
The Story County Community Foundation gave the lead grant to KHOI, so we have special gratitude towards the organization.
We're talking to you right now, Bob, because of that grant that has helped us get on the air and to be able to present this program as well as all the other programs that we're able to present.
There is a grant deadline coming up for members of Story County to apply. We would like to make sure that people know about this opportunity and look forward to speaking about it.
Welcome, Susie.
Well, thank you. It's a pleasure to be here, and it's really fun to see the radio station in progress. It's thrilling to us to know that it's actually really making a difference in Story County, because that's what we hope we're going to be able to accomplish now and in the future. As far as where we came from, it's kind of a long story, but it's one I love telling. In 2004 and 5, the state legislature were receiving many, many applications for gaming casinos, because the not-for-profit agencies in the counties that had gaming casinos were doing so well because they had gaming revenues to use for their not-for-profit agencies, and they were able to provide many more social services. So everybody was petitioning to dig a hole, put a riverboat in it, and open a gaming casino. So they said, okay, no more. But they started looking for a way that they might be able to provide some equity to the rest of the county, because although we might not want to admit it, people from Story County were going to other gaming casinos and spending their money and leaving their taxes. And so it was a way that they felt they needed to help return some of that money to the counties that it was coming from. And they set up a legislative program by which we could, if you were a community foundation, apply for a portion of those gaming taxes to come to your county. And we didn't have a community foundation, so the first thing we had to do was get together a group of committed and caring people to start putting together a community foundation so that we would be able to apply for these casino or gaming dollars that the legislature was making available.
So what year was that?
2005. And so in March of 2005, we applied for the first round of gaming grants and received that money. I think that year we received $67,000, and it was a huge influx for our Story County. It was new money, and if we hadn't started a community foundation, it just wouldn't have come to Story County. So that part was really exciting. And they set it up in two portions. The money that they give us, 25% of that money goes into a permanent endowment to benefit Story County forever. And the other 75% of that has to be granted out by a competitive grant process into the community or into the county to be spent down within that next year. So that gets immediate dollars out to our not-for-profits in the county. We have done so well with them that we no longer have to apply. They just send us the money every year now. And we just found out that we're going to receive more money this year. There was actually a new casino opened in Iowa. Mm-hmm. So there's a bit more. It's a good thing for our community foundation at this time of year. That was where these dollars came from originally.
So you've basically got two revenue streams on this. You've got the annual money that the state distributes to that 75%, and then the growth on the endowment, does that go into granting as well, to that 25% that you have to permanently invest? Does that turn around and get invested?
It absolutely does. Plus, we have had people add to that permanent endowment fund. So we are able to give, through the grant process, 5% each year. That will grow forever. So we use the growth plus any additional dollars into that fund and grant 5% of that every year in addition. So not only are we using the gaming revenue, but we also have our own unrestricted Story County Community Foundation endowment that we are able to grant out into the community without quite the restrictions that come with the state dollars. The grants that we give using the state gaming dollars, we have to receipt back to the state every year, and they really keep track of every penny of that. So we really do our due diligence with those grants.
Now, when you give out these grants, what is your mission?
We want to impact as many people as we can. We encourage residents of the Story County communities to be inclusive, welcoming and understanding of diverse cultures. And that's our very first objective, actually. We want to support strong and stable families and provide solid beginnings for youth and children. We promote the effectiveness, long-term visibility and viability of the arts and cultural organizations, and to provide access to the arts for new and underserved audiences, and to strengthen the nonprofit sector by supporting nonprofit organizations. We promote philanthropy and we encourage civic involvement. Then we work hard to serve as a catalyst in collaborative efforts for the betterment of Story County. And we address other community needs in areas of education, health, mental health, and human services. So we have a pretty widespread base with what we're doing. And we also will provide seed money for a new program, which I think maybe is where the radio station came in. This was a new program that you were just getting started, so we were willing to provide some seed money for that. But beyond that, we don't provide operating budgets. We don't want to be somebody's budget. We want to make a difference for the things that they might not be able to provide for otherwise. So we don't do salaries and budgets, or we don't fund deficits or that sort of thing.
Well, one of the things that really impressed me at last year's awards where you were announcing the recipients was the breadth of the county that you covered and the projects. I remember there was something in McCallsburg, there was something up near Zering, there was Nevada. Can you talk a little bit about how you're serving the entire county and the projects that you funded over the year?
If we have two very comparable grants, and one is a community we've not been able to serve in the past, that might give them a leg up. We do try very hard to grant money to the entire county. We're looking for projects that will make an impact. We like projects that will impact many. We usually don't fund consumable things. We want things that are going to be lasting. We won't fund food for a youth project or that kind of thing. We don't fund events because, again, the money is used and gone and we don't really see the impact. We try to not have too many restrictions. We want people to be able to be creative and feel comfortable applying for their good ideas.
So you fund services and objects?
Yes. We get a lot of requests for computers, and that bothered us for a while. We didn't want to be known as the foundation that bought everybody a new computer. But there sometimes are reasons that a not-for-profit needs a new computer to be able to do what they're doing. So, I mean, we don't say, no, we don't fund computers. We now say we fund a limited amount of technology. We still really prefer to look at the creative ideas.
And do I understand correctly, you also don't fund capital campaigns?
That's correct. We say we usually will not fund. We don't like to draw a line and say absolutely never, but it would have to be a pretty extraordinary situation.
So if somebody was applying, they would apply for a particular object, not as a percentage of a capital campaign.
That's right. We prefer to do a project rather than a part of a project.
So if somebody would like to apply, how do they get started?
They can go to our website. It's just storycountyfoundation.org and click on the link to the community grants, or there's a link to just grants available, and then go to the community grants page, and it has the application right there and all the information they need. And we ask them to submit it both online, and then we need the signed written document mailed to us as well.
And the deadline again?
September 30th. And we keep the same deadline every year. So you can just put it on your calendar and remember it every year. It's September 30th. This grant cycle, we have a maximum amount that you can apply for of $6,000. And so within the grant, we ask for a budget that shows how that $6,000 would be spent. And if maybe the project is going to be a $10,000 project, we do ask that you tell us how you plan to fund the rest of it. We try to keep these applications pretty simple. We don't want somebody to have to hire a grant writer to feel comfortable applying for a grant with a community foundation. And so we keep them pretty simple, and we welcome telephone calls if you have any question about the application itself. It's 515-232-9200, but I will say we're not there all the time, and my cell phone number is actually on our phone message, and I'm very happy to have anybody call me at home. I work mostly out of my house, so please feel free to call me there if you have grant questions.
And the number again?
232-9200.
Do you have to be a 501c3 organization?
That's a really good question. You have to have charitable intentions with this money. But do you have to be a nonprofit? No. But you have to have a fiscal sponsor that is. And actually all that means is you have to have a 501c3 willing to sign that you will be fiscally responsible for how you spend your grant dollars and be sure that it's spent for the manner in which it was granted and that the receipts come back to us so that we can receipt it to the state. I mean, the good example that they kept using when we were getting into this was maybe there's a women's club that would like to plant flowers around the entrance to the city. They are not a 501c3, but they could ask a garden club that is to be their fiscal sponsor and apply for money to do that kind of thing. So,
what's the process once the applications are received?
We check to make sure that they have submitted everything they need to submit and that it was all in on time because we want this to be a fair process. And then the committee, they read every application and they score it ahead of the time that we meet together. And then we set aside a block. It usually takes us 4 or 5 hours, but once we jump into them, we don't leave until we've completed them. So we sit down and we go through all of them. And sometimes they're ones that are easy to weed out, but it's a very, very difficult process. And I really admire this committee being willing to put in the time and energy because you're just drained when you're done. All you want to do is go out and raise money so that you can give more money away next year because it's a huge process. And so we look through our criteria and score them, and we usually end up at the end with 5 or 6 that we just can't say no to, but then there are those that maybe if we don't fund this part of this grant, then we can fund this one also. And it gets hard. Once the allocations committee has gone through and made its recommendations, then that goes to the Story County Community Foundation Board of Directors. We are affiliate of the Community Foundation of Greater Des Moines. They are actually our parents. And so we submit our recommendations to them, and because they are the legal ones responsible for this, they have to check and make sure all the 501c3s are intact and all the legal piece is all right for us to be able to grant that state money to the entities that we are recommending. And once that's in place, then they send us the checks, and then we get the fun part of awarding them to the agencies or groups that have applied for them.
Do you have the award date set for this year?
We do. It's the 6th of November, actually. That's a Tuesday. And anybody is welcome and encouraged to attend. We're going to be at Ryman Gardens. And they have been very generous to donate that space every year. We have, in the last 4 or 5 years, we've gone there and we love that. Where it's at 10:45 with the awards presentations will start at 11. So, yes, we would encourage the public to attend.
It was just a very heartwarming experience. And I remember you, Don, saying to me at the time that these other projects that were being awarded, you just never would have known about them. Because the awards are not the obvious organizations that you would think of. So can you describe a little bit some of the people that got money last year and what's happened?
We see probably tenfold what you saw at the awards ceremony. Probably one of my favorite organizations that I didn't know anything about before this process is the Good Neighbors. They make money go so far. But what we gave them money for last year was for gas vouchers. So somebody might have a job, but if they didn't have money to put in the gas tank to get to their job, then all of a sudden they were unemployed. And it has made a difference in the lives of many people, just that they could actually give them a few dollars to have gas money until they have money coming in. It's those kind of small stories that have really been heartwarming. And, of course, we've had some favorite agencies through the years. I think Raising Readers in Story County, they really speak to our goal of supporting strong and stable families and encouraging children and childhood growth. And they have just done such wonderful things with the money we've been able to give them. One grant that was very special to me anyway, and it's been fun watching the change actually take place, our American Legion post on Main Street did not have handicap accessibility. And one of the stories of one of our own veterans having to get carried up the back steps in his wheelchair every time he wanted to go, and he couldn't go if there was a snowstorm or anything. That just shouldn't be happening here in Ames, Iowa. So it was an easy grant for us to decide to fund, and now they have handicap operable door on the front, and I think they actually use some sort of a key card so they have access and don't have to wait for somebody to come and open the door for them as well. So those kinds of things are just great to be able to have a few extra dollars in Story County to help with. Mm-hmm. It's fun to be able to find a $6,000 project that we can do that's making a difference in Story County.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think, as Ursula alluded earlier, I think one of the great things about it is that the money may not fund the entire project, but it provides a spur to help fulfill the rest of that money, whether it's the final piece of the puzzle or the early on in the process, and it shows encouragement to other people. Yeah, we've got this money, now let's raise the rest of it to make it happen. I think that's a very important part of it, is that it continues to build the strengths within the organization as they work to fulfill the grant and meet the other financial needs to make the project complete. Now, our signal covers into counties surrounding Story County. So my assumption is that anyone who's in an organization in those counties wouldn't be eligible to apply to the Story County Community Foundation. But are there similar organizations in the county surrounding Story County that people who are listening might want to explore in their county about the possibilities?
Absolutely, Don. Every county has a community foundation established. Almost all of them have very active community foundations and are doing similar projects. Yes, I would really encourage anybody to look into their community foundation and what their grant process is in their county. We do have all the contacts from the other foundations, so I'd be happy to do that.
So talk about Story County. What do you think about when you think about our county?
It's a wonderful, caring environment, but certainly not without issues. I think one of the things this position has pointed out to me is that there certainly are people with needs in Story County, and basically the other side of that coin is there's so many people willing to help them if you just match the two together. And there are a few people like Vic Moss in this world that are doing so much for people in the community. He runs Emergency Residence Shelter and devotes his life to providing shelter for the homeless. And we just have a lot of those individuals in Story County. I think we do have some very strong values that most people were raised with. And
we hear a lot about how the legislature has difficulty coming together and passing certain issues. But this one was a bipartisan passage that created this, and with the idea that it was going to create good things throughout the state and put the determination of those things at the county level. And so an opportunity to expand and serve people at a level that where they might not otherwise been recognized and the service needed identified.
I think
had been for that.
That's very true. That's very true, and a very good point.
I'd like to hear anything you could say about how this has personally affected you, doing this work and being in contact with all these organizations.
Oh my gosh, it gives me a reason to get up and smile every day. It's so rewarding to see people that really feel good about what they're doing.
Essentially, we're talking about the Community Foundation Community Grant that is due on September 30th, and it can be for projects up to $6,000. Which are not part of a percentage of a capital campaign that are for a particular object or for a particular service that has lasting benefits to the community. To get information about this,
www.storycountyfoundation.org, and our phone number is 515-232-9200. And again, my cell phone number is on that answering machine. If you don't reach us immediately, please feel free to call my cell phone.
And like you said, you would be happy to give people information while they're doing the grant process so they can understand better what you're looking for and how to present your project.
Absolutely. I am a teacher at heart, and I believe questions are good.
Okay, we've been talking with Susie Sheerfels, the chair of the Story County Community Foundation, talking about the grant application that is coming up September 30th, and we encourage anyone who has a project that they feel would qualify for this to get in touch with Susie or to make an application. Thank you, Susie, for coming in today. We hope you get lots of projects that you have difficulty wading through because they're all so good.
Thank you, Don and Ursula. It's a pleasure to be here. I appreciate it.
We've contacted some of the folks that you funded this year, and so we look forward in the rest of this program to hear from them.
sometimes feels far away, and you sometimes will go astray to see just how far to go to feel safe and warm again. You left without looking back. Now you are lost and lonely without a friend but me.
With us today also is Cynthia McClure, who is a volunteer and a reporter and a producer at KHOI. Cynthia?
Yes.
Welcome.
I'm very glad to be here. I first started in radio ages ago at KIDE in Hoopa, California.
Which is also community radio?
Very much so. Very much so. So at the time, it was the only Native American-owned radio station in California. And I grew up in a small town close to that called Willow Creek and started volunteering here when I got the opportunity.
You've been speaking to people this week who have been getting some of the Story County Community Foundation grants. Why don't you introduce our guest?
Yes, we have Vic Moss here. He is from the Emergency Residence Project, providing housing and shelter for individuals who are in need.
Welcome, Vic. Welcome.
Thank you.
You received monies for your project.
Well, this year, we got a grant for $6,000, and we used it to increase our overflow capacity at our shelter. We simply have run out of room at our shelter, so we rent space at local motels. There's a huge demand or need for this type of help. Our organization, our name is Emergency Residence Project, and we're a homeless shelter that houses adults or single men, women, and families. We're on South Kellogg, just south of the downtown area of Ames, a few blocks. When people show up, we don't ask them where they're from. If they're homeless and need a place, so then we will house them. Right now, we're averaging about 51 people a night that we're housing. Most of them stay at our shelter, but a fair number also we use motels for because we're almost always full.
And what do you do?
I'm the director. Been there since 1987, so about 25 years. Before that, I worked with children in a group home, and before that, I was a social worker and worked on poverty programs for the state of Iowa, and also did child abuse investigations.
When you say that you got $6,000, how many people would something like that help?
It made it possible to help about 30 families. A typical family would be a single mom with two kids. They can't work long enough or hard enough to make enough money to afford their rent here, and just like clockwork, every day families contact us. We can have as many as half a dozen in a single day facing eviction or have lost their home and have no place to go, and if we don't have room for them at the shelter, if we can get them into a motel for a while to buy some time. And sometimes that's what we do is buy time. The problem has been getting worse almost month by month since I've been at the shelter. Sometimes as simple as another $25 or 25 cent increase in gas or a car breaking down means the rent doesn't get paid. But there's been a decrease in number of jobs that pay livable wages. We found that every time a factory closes down, you know, like the Maytag factory in Newton, or places all over Iowa close down, these jobs, they're not replaced with like jobs. Usually people go from making a decent wage to making a barely survivable wage. Really, those that are working and can't make it, not making a living wage. Right now, 40% of all the renters in Iowa can't afford the housing they're in. The numbers are so unwieldy that I can't sit with families and work out budgets that are realistic. And we do help a lot of people, but there are an awful lot that we can't help too because they're in so deep.
Can you describe an incident where the funding you got helped a family and how that played out?
Every single day we do make a difference for some people. One that comes to mind recently was a family that showed up with all their possessions on it. It had an old van, and I think the possessions were actually a higher stack than their vehicle. They had ropes and everything, tied all their stuff up. They just simply come here because they lived in Ames years ago. They showed up at our door, and we were full. In most cases, I'd put them up in a motel for a week. During that particular week, however, the motel that we used was full because of any time there's any big activity like the Farm Progress Show or even a home football game, the motels often are full. This case, they had three children. I knew quite well because this young man with his wife and children showed up, and we'd had him in housing, I think, about 10, 12 years ago. I knew of a mobile home court in one of the little towns around here. I knew the owner, and so I called him. It happened that he had a place that had come open. I promised him that I would come up with the money for the first month's rent and deposit if he'd let him move in, and he just did it on my word. And then I called another organization, which I think a couple other organizations chipped in a little bit. I think we put him up in a motel the first night. The next day, got him into this mobile home, one of the small towns in Story County. You know, they called back later. They were just ecstatic because it was almost a miracle that there happened to be a place available and there was a landlord that we could work with like that. We took the last place that he had. But if you look at the larger picture, my realization is that we are losing this battle overall. Mm. You know, each year we help. We've been able to increase our help almost every year, but we also turn away a record number of people, too, and that number has been increasing faster.
So what keeps you going?
I've been one of the lucky ones. I've done everything by choice. You know, I've never slept at night and wondered what was going to happen to my family because we were in the face of being evicted.
So do you think it's
struggling.
A crisis here in Ames? Do you think it's a crisis in Story County in the
It's
US?
A crisis in Ames, in Story County, and throughout the country. Unfortunately, there are other forms of talk radio in which the message that's being put out is that it's the people are inherently lazy or undeserving, you know. And yet, if you start looking at the numbers and actually get to meet people that are living, you see that sometimes they're struggling against odds that are incredible. We have families that have their power turned off even though the power is needed for the breathing apparatus for their children. I think it's really a matter of our core values, and do we have an obligation to our fellow human beings?
This is the Emergency Residence Project at 225 South Kellogg in Ames, and how you've been helped by Story County Community Foundation with your grant of $6,000 to help with your overflow housing needs.
We're pretty much open 24/7. If they need housing, well, then they should call us. If they're facing an eviction, we work with other organizations, and I can tell them where to go.
Awesome. Thank you, sir. Even though these are tough issues, it's helpful to know that they exist, and the Story County Community Foundation has impacted so many people's lives.
Yeah, well, thank you.
I go walking past the town signs, further on down the highway. Will there be something waiting for me, or am I fooling myself again? You know I left this all behind long before you came across my mind. Nothing kept me from leaving that day, but that day was nothing like today. I fell on my knees then, I prayed that change would spare me, that I could stay, oh, that I could stay the same old way. times are flying right before me. It's not like before when I was blind. I remember seeing only the colors of the beautiful western skies. But now things are much deeper. It makes the darks much darker. But the light shine brighter on your beautiful face. I fell on my knees then. I prayed the change would spare me, that I could stay. Oh, that I could stay the same old way. The colors turn and turn back again. There's always something to believe in. But that's not what you're searching for. No, it's something more hidden. And you could spend your life waiting around, or you could finally up and leave this town. But there's something just follows you, no matter which road you go down. I fell on my knees then. I prayed the change would spare me, that I could stay. Oh, that I could stay same old way. If I go walking past the town signs, further on down the highway, will there be something waiting for me, or am I fooling myself again? You know I left this all behind long before you came across my mind. Nothing kept me from leaving that day, but that day was nothing like today. I fell on my knees then. I prayed the change would spare me, that I could stay. Oh, that I could stay. I fell on my knees then. I prayed the change would spare me, that I could stay. Oh, that I could stay same old way.
My name is Amber Corrieri. Mainstream Living serves persons with disabilities. We serve people in four counties: Story County, Boone County, Dallas, and Polk County. We serve approximately 500 individuals each day, and services can range from in-home care in someone's home for a few hours, all the way up to 24-hour care in a home that we own and operate. And then down at our MILC Center, our Mainstream Employment and Learning Center, we have several programs that we offer. We have a couple of enclaves here in Ames in which persons with disabilities partner with a local business to work there alongside without disabilities. So we operate two enclaves at Sauer Danfoss here in town and one at Hawk Chemicals. And then we also have our day habilitation, which is where people with disabilities go to interact with their friends, to go out into the community and do different things. Many of the people that we serve participate in our volunteer program, which basically sends out the people we serve into the community to do everything from delivering Meals on Wheels to going to the Ames Library and stocking shelves, helping out at Food at First.
What is your mission here? It sounds really big, actually.
Yep. We are very mission-driven. If you go around our facilities, you'll see the mission kind of hanging up in several different places. But our mission is to provide services to persons with disabilities, which are designed to enhance opportunities, create success, and fulfill dreams. And so everything we do, we were talking about individualized services, is all about fulfilling that mission for each individual person that we serve here. We received a grant award of $6,000.
What was it used for?
The Milk Center, as we call it, is where we serve persons with disabilities who may not necessarily be looking for employment, but go to our center for different types of community integration activities, recreation.
What do you do here? What is your role in the mission here?
I am the director of development, so I am responsible for fundraising for the organization. I do everything from write grants to plan special events, give presentations to community groups and business who are interested in learning about the mission of Mainstream Living. I do some of the marketing for the organization as well, create more awareness for the organization.
Great. Can you give us an example and tell us how this service has helped someone?
Sure. Well, one of our services that we are very proud of is our medically fragile homes. This is a newer project for us. We started it in 2006, and we have two of these homes right now. But these homes serve young adults who are aging out of the children's system. And these young adults have very severe disabilities and are considered medically fragile. So they require 24-hour care that is specialized. And when a child like this ages out of the children's system, they have very few options. They can go into a nursing home, they can go to a state institution, they can go live at home with their families. All of these options are not only undesirable, but sometimes just not possible because of the care that these individuals require.
So when you say not possible, it's just that they require 24-hour service because of their inability to take care of themselves?
Correct. These individuals are all nonverbal, nonmobile. They can't even position themselves in a chair by themselves. They are fed through feeding tubes. They are all in wheelchairs. They typically have compounding medical issues like epilepsy, blindness, diabetes. These are the absolute most fragile individuals that we serve.
How many of these people do you serve?
Right now, we have two medically fragile homes. Each home houses five individuals. That's the maximum allowed according to state law. The homes that we provide are the only ones of their kind in the state of Iowa.
So these homes, you were describing that the homes were these very fragile individuals. There's 10 individuals in that.
10 right now, yes. The homes are unique to the state of Iowa for several reasons. Number one, they're built in an established neighborhood, just like any other home. Everything is customized, so each person has their own bedroom that is designed to, you know, suit their personality. They all have their own bathrooms. They all have a sleeper sofa for families that are visiting. All of the homes are obviously fully accessible for wheelchairs. They have heated flooring. They have a lift and track system installed throughout the entire home so that consumers can be safely lifted and moved to other rooms or positioned in a chair. But the most unique thing is that there's a nurse on duty 24 hours a day. Many of the larger facilities, the institution-type facilities in Iowa that serve these types of individuals, don't even have nurses on duty 24 hours a day. So, like I said, these homes are unique to the state. They are, however, very expensive to build. Each one costs about $1 million to build. And so we have two right now. We will break ground on our third home here in about a month or so. So we're very excited about that. But we still do have a large waiting list, above 60 people. So, again, these homes are allowing children to live closer to their parents, where before they may have had to drive 2 or 3 hours to see their child.
That's really good to hear. That's kind of heartwarming to know that Central Iowa has that facility. Well, can you tell me more about how the construction helped somebody and how that changed their lives?
Sure. Well, there were two, goals of ours in completing that renovation project. The first was obviously to create a safer entrance, number one. We wanted to make the facility more inviting. It was kind of dark and, you know, as friendly as we could possibly make it.
What have you learned from this grant process and also receiving the funds, I mean, and the whole project? What have you learned from this?
You know, to me, it's the small changes that can really have a big impact. You wouldn't think that something like taking a garage door down and putting two windows in is a big deal. But it really is. When you talk to, especially the staff that work down there every day, all day, they have just really noticed a difference in some of our consumers and how they appreciate being able to look out the windows or, you know, open up and get fresh air into the facility. It's just those little things that can really make a difference sometimes.
So it's
in people's
lives. A quality
of
life issue.
Mm-hmm.
Awesome.
Mm-hmm.
So what is your website here?
It's www.mainstreamliving.org.
Mainstreamliving.org.
Correct.
And the phone number here
is 515-232-8405. At the Milk Center, we are open during the day from 8 to 5. We serve individuals. If there are families or individuals looking for other types of services that we provide, they can certainly visit our website to find out more about our different programs and services and how we might be able to help.
And you serve four counties. So
correct, yes.
These facilities are kind of located all over the counties.
Yes, we have homes in all of the counties that I mentioned earlier.
So that's Story and Boone and Polk.
And Dallas County.
And Dallas County.
Yep. We have mental health services in Des Moines, in Polk County, not in Story County. But we do have several mental health facilities in Polk County as well.
Awesome. So if you wanted them to contact you and find out where the times and locations where they could be served, so that would be mainstreamliving.org.
Yes. Correct.
Thank you for your time.
And absolutely.
You have a great day.
Thank you.
With Carol Williams, who is with Story County Conservation. We received a $6,000 grant for some play equipment up at Dakin's Lake, up by Ziering, Iowa. In fact, it's adjacent to Ziering, so way up in the northeast corner of Story County. We are expanding it, so it will be about 100 acres. By December, we'll have that land purchased. We are doing an expansion of the project and putting in a new campground. We currently have a 10-site campground with electricity, so if anybody's looking to camp, they can do that until through November at any rate. We had to take out some old play equipment that wasn't safe anymore. Mm-hmm. And so we wrote the grant to replace some of that play equipment. Now what's happened is we were able to actually purchase what's called natural play equipment. So what we purchased with the community grant foundation money is a raccoon log. I know it sounds kind of crazy that a conservation agency is buying something that's called a raccoon log. It's actually made out of concrete, but it's like a hollow log. And so it's safe as a playground piece and meets all the playground standards. Kids can play on it like a real log, so they can crawl over it and they can crawl through it. And our idea for this playground is that it would have quite a few natural components. As a conservation agency, we also want to make sure that we're always inviting people to explore the outdoors. I mean, that's really our mission. If we can somehow incorporate some natural pieces into that traditional playground, so whether it's logs laying down on the ground or stepping stones made out of stumps, or even rocks to climb on. That gives those kids that ability to go, hey, I can play on this. This is okay. It gives them permission. And it also puts it all together in one place for parents, because we all know as parents, you get a little bit nervous if you're not watching your kids all the time, especially the little ones. So this will provide that opportunity. We had anticipated that we would not be expanding the park for another several years. And what's happened, though, is we've kind of fast accelerated this project. We didn't think we'd have the money for expansion. Now we do, and we're planning on a 30-site campground with the playscape, and we'll have a shelter house, you know, day-use area, nice boat ramp, and get this, a new 15-acre lake to put it at. We have a small lake there now. We're adding another lake below it. I have some wetlands incorporated into the process, and we'll actually bid that project out in probably February, be under construction all next year, and then actually be open by spring of 2014.
You said that this was a grant you received this past year, and I think Susie Sheerholtz mentioned that you'd received more than one. Did you receive another grant that you talked about?
Yes, we did. They have two grants, the foundation. They have small grants that they give, but they also do one larger grant each year, and we were fortunate enough to get that. I think it was 2 years ago, and it was written by our environmental education coordinator, Jerry Keyes, and it was for a 15-passenger van. And that has been awesome for us. If anybody ever wants to see it, it's in the parking lot. He's got a cool wrap on it that's got nature stuff on it. But it doesn't.
Parking lot where?
At McFarland Park. But it doesn't sit in that parking lot very much because they use it a lot. This summer, I saw it used all the time. I know they went on a caving trip with it with kids. They went on several canoe trips. And of course, this summer you weren't able to canoe much right in Story County, so you had to go somewhere else. Yeah, and they went on a big trip, backpacking trip as well. So we use that for the environmental education program to take kids around and even to take it to some of our parks when we have big groups. But we also can use it for, we do a history tour of the Pioneer Cemeteries occasionally. So that's one that you can just pack everybody in and use it for. Sometimes we might have a big group that we want to take volunteers to, and we could have everybody meet at McFarland, put them all in the van, and do sort of that carpooling instead of everybody having to drive to a site. So it's very, very useful. Like, it's fun to see. I always enjoy watching the kids at McFarland Park as they pile out of these vans all dirty and happy, you know, and tired, exhausted from these trips.
So could you just talk about what the impact that the grant's having on the entire county and as you get around the county and your duties as a park ranger?
Sure. Well, first of all, of course, I love Story County, and I do get a chance as a park ranger to see pretty much all the corners of the county. I know I look through the list of the recipients usually each year to kind of see, oh, who got what. There might be playscapes, there might be boat docks, there might be, I know in Huxley they got what I guess is exercise equipment, but it's along the heart of Iowa Nature Trail, which we co-manage with a whole bunch of communities along the southern part of Story County. And so while, yeah, Huxley got the grant, that doesn't mean that it doesn't benefit everybody
right,
in Story County. You know, and I think a lot of those grants are like that, where everybody in Story County probably is seeing some benefit or could see some benefit.
Can you describe the Story County Conservation Board a little bit?
All of the counties in Iowa, through legislation, have county conservation boards. And each of those boards are 5-member boards, and they're appointed by the Board of Supervisors. And each person serves for 5 terms. And then each county is a little bit different as far as what they do. Mm-hmm. All of our missions are parks, recreation, and also historic preservation for historic things. I think we have over 3,000 acres. Some of the biggest one is Hickory Grove Park, which is over by Colo, which has the 41-site campground, 98-acre lake, well known for its fishing, and we have a beach there. We manage Peterson Park and McFarland Park over on the Ames side of the county. And then, of course, Dakin Lake, and then lots of small natural areas, hunting, trapping areas as well. And we also manage the Heart of Iowa Nature Trail. It goes from Slater all the way to Collins, and it goes into Marshall County to Rhodes, and then eventually would go to Melbourne. That would tie up, of course, with the High Trestle Trail that a lot of people are familiar with in Slater that goes out to the big bridge over the Des Moines River. Nice, slow, easy pace, which is, it's kind of gets you off the beaten path. So does that answer your question about Story County Conservation?
Yeah. Yeah. If somebody would like to find out where the parks are, where would they go?
Well, we have a webpage through Story County. So if you just go to the Story County page and then go to the Parks and Conservation page, you'll see a great map and all of our parks are listed. And so that's probably the easiest way.
What's the website?
They can just go to storycountyconservation.org. So that's the easiest one.
Storycountyconservation.org.
All one word. Otherwise, McFarland Park, we're open 8:30 to 4:30. That's where our main offices are for administration. And so if you go out there 8:30 to 4:30 to the Conservation Center. I'm going to put a quick plug in for our fall festival. That's coming up October 7th. We always have a band. It's Jefferson County Green Band. It's Sunday, and it's from 3 to 6, and we have a barbecue as well with it and lots of kids' crafts. Hopefully it'll be good weather, but we have it rain or shine. We still do the traditional newsletter that gets mailed out, so you can call our offices at 515-232-2516 and get on our mailing list.
Again,
515-232-2516 to get on our mailing list.
Excellent, excellent. So you're a park ranger.
I am.
Do you like doing that?
I love working with people. I get to talk a lot to a lot of people that love our parks. So you might be out there talking to somebody who's fishing, checking a fishing license.
Can you describe one incident that really was positive for you as a park ranger?
Well, a recent one this summer was visiting with a mom whose son is actually in the military. And she thanked me for my service, which was amazing to me. Because I feel like what I do is fun and it's easy and something I love to do. So being thanked for that was really nice.
And why do you think she thanked you?
I think she appreciates having parks and the outdoors and somebody mm-hmm. taking care of them mm-hmm. and enjoying them. And that's really nice to hear.
People appreciate the environment.
Yeah. And I think, you know, we're so blessed in Story County that way. Mm-hmm. We have always had such fantastic support from everyone. It's hard for us to keep up with the volunteers that call us. Mm-hmm. So we're just, you know, it's just a wonderful place to work and people that truly care about the environment and conservation. The land is important. And we have a relationship with it every day. You know, you go out and you watch, after 26 years, you look at prairies that you planted and have changed so much over time. So that's wonderful. But really, for me, it's always been about the service to the public, preserving it for our future generations and for people to use now. And that's what's crucial to me.
That's wonderful.
This has been Local Talk on KHOI, where we spend an hour focusing on the people, stories, and events of Central Iowa. I've been your host today, Ursula Rudenberg, with
Don Wirth. We've been speaking about the opportunity for social service agencies to apply for grants through the Story County Community Foundation with an application deadline of September 30th. Our guests today included Susie Sheerholz, president of the Board of Directors of the Story County Community Foundation. You can find out more information of her organization and how to apply for those grants at storycountycommunityfoundation.org or call 232-9200, 232-9200. We also spoke with Carol Williams of the Story County Conservation Board. Carol's main office is located out at McFarland Park, where they have office hours from 8:30 to 4:30, Monday through Friday. You can get more information about the Conservation Board and the parks and lots of recreation areas here in Story County at their website, storycountyconservation.org, or by calling 232-2516, 232-2516.
We also spoke with Vic Moss from the Emergency Resident Project. To find out more information about emergency housing, go to aimsshelter.org. That's aimsshelter.org or call 232-8075. That's 232-8075 or email them at erp@midiowa.net. erp@midiowa.net. We also heard from Amber Corrieri at Mainstream Living. For information about services for disabled individuals, go to mainstreamliving.org. That's mainstreamliving.org, or call them at 232-8405, 232-8405. We've been listening to the music of Iowa musician Chad Elliott. The songs were Home and Same Old Way from the CD Redemption Man. We also heard Ancient Forest by The Clannad from their CD Clannad Legend. Our theme song is from our own Tom Richards and Al Harris from the CD Ballad of Kay Shelley, and the song is Backtrackin'. Thank you for listening, and see you again on the radio.